people talk, anyone remember the full title? The Subversion Guys. How to Deal with Poisonous People by the Subversion Guys. And it's basically how to deal with that person that's out there to destroy your project. They might not even know it, and you might be that person and not even know it. So, for example, the Ubuntu project as well, we have a lot of governance structures. I don't know who's ever seen General Bacon talk about governance, where he talks about all this crap. He's got a book. but we make that all available for free. So take it, use it for your own project, right? If you want to use our code of conduct, use that. We have like regional boards that handle conflicts or contributions or how you deal with resources, all that kind of stuff. Remember, this is free and open source software, so build on somebody else, right? If you're going to have to like write your own stuff from scratch, I don't know, you might want to think about seeing how someone else does it. Next slide, please. Whatever medium you use, use it. The biggest thing I learned about this whole entire thing is Ryan and I really sucked at communicating to everybody on the planet exactly what River was supposed to be. And I'll get to that in a minute, but don't assume that anyone knows what your roadmap is. Ryan and I knew what our roadmap is, but that's because we would talk on IM to each other. Because we're friends, we're always chatting anyway. You could be chatting about something, and then the next thing you know, you're chatting about Gwiver. What we should have been doing is, when we talk about Gwiver, to put that stuff on the public mailing list. So at least other people can see what's going on. Because you can't do this by yourself. So you need to have the discipline to do things in a more public manner. So, have a roadmap. Which is really ironic because there's always been a Gwiver roadmap. It's just we like never told anybody about it. And you want to be inclusive, not exclusive. So this is a pretty, I think everyone's figured this out by now. You know, having like a secret cabal is probably not the way to do things. So if you have like a public mailing list and then an internal mailing list that's private with where the real developers hang out, that's probably not the right way to do it. Next slide. And then choosing the right platform. I want to spend some time here because, so he was like, man, so I'm going to write a Twitter client. I was like, oh, Adobe Air. It ends up Adobe wrote an entire platform just for Twitter clients. Has anyone seen an Adobe Air app that isn't a Twitter client? There's like two, right? So anyway, there was one open source Air app called Spaz. I don't know if anyone's ever seen this, but Ryan and I didn't like these Adobe Air apps because first of all, they look very, they don't match your desktop, right? They all have custom widgets and just like, they look cool, but they didn't really like work right the way you want it. So he chose a platform that he felt would get him the most amount of help. So first of all, he wanted to make a GNOME app because we're GNOME people, that's just how it is. And we knew we wanted to get a lot of contributors and a lot of help, so he chose Python. And PyGTK is great for apps like this because A, when I go to my LUG meeting, I know like, at least half of those guys know Python or Python GTK. It's very popular. And it was easy for us to find help. In fact, anyone here from the LUG who's contributed to Gwiver? I know Greg has. I think the other guys have left me and are doing a ZSH talk, which is probably way more interesting than this. So we really picked that. I get a lot of like people asking for help, right? They're like, I need help to grow my community. I'm like, oh, cool, what are you working on? He's like, I'm writing like an MP3 player in Lisp that uses like TickleDK and stuff. I'm like, dude, I don't even know anybody that uses that stuff. So when you're figuring out what you want to do, you want to pick something that will get you help, right? So use a modern toolkit. You know, obviously, if you're going to do KDE, it's going to be in Qt. So think about things like popularity, and you want to build on roadmaps, on frameworks. So since a lot of people, they first start writing their first application, what's the first thing you want to do? You're on an MP3 player, right? And remember, since Linux is about choice, a lot of people, you know, they want to rewrite their own wheel, right? And they feel like, oh, you know, I need to get down into that level. So, for example, what I would recommend is because someone's always like, I'm going to do an MP3 player. I was like, oh, dude, can you just help me fix Pangea? They're like, no, I'm going to write an MP3 player. I'm going to write an MP3 player. I was like, okay, well, at least use GStreamer, right? Because when you invest in a platform, like, say, GStreamer, enables Banshee to be built, which is the MP3 player I use. However, GStreamer wouldn't have been ready if Rhythmbox, a few years ago, hadn't decided to ship a Rhythmbox backend at the point. And now we get things like Totem that also use GStreamer. Because all that work that happened there, we can now finally at some point get a better video editor like Pity. It took applications like Jocosher and stuff, finding all these bugs in the platform. So when you're choosing what you want, the stuff you want to build on, consider using like a platform. Use a high level thing. And then of course there's like freedom. I'm trying to remember what I tried to say here. I don't know if I wanted to say something about Mono or not. I don't know, whatever. And of course think of the distros, right? Like I said, with the commonality, you don't want to be like, well, you know, damn it, I'm going to write this thing in Lisp and there's nothing, you know, no one can do about it. And then 6 months later, you're like, I would like to be on the default install of this, like, you know, of Ubuntu or something. It's like, well, dude, I mean, that's, you know, I mean, we can only fit on one CD and things like that. Because just think about what distributions have to deal with to ship your software, right? So if you're using something really exotic and not using a framework, you wrote your own backend of the MP3 player, the distro is going to be like, man, why don't you just write in GStreamer? That way it would have been just, you know, a few extra K. Now I gotta like do a license review of, you know, this entire thing that you did. What's the security? Oh man, it's just a pain in the ass. I'll do that. Thanks. So one of the great things about this whole platform thing is we had an opportunity with Identical, was kind of like launching at the time and starting. Us as Wiver guys got to talk with guys like Evan. So it's really neat to be able to say, you know what, you're kind of running the server piece. We're like working on the client piece for Linux. There's probably a lot of cool things that we can do in there that you can't do, for example, since they're both open, that you can't do with like Twitter and then whatever the closed Adobe Air client is. So we had a really good opportunity every time we would break something that, you know, we had a community there of identical people to help us out. Now, my favorite part here. So one of the reasons, so Ryan wanted to write about WebKit, WebKit GTK and stuff, and at the time it was very not working. But it was like, well, you know, it's going to work eventually. They got, you know, Epiphany's going to switch to it. It's going to be great. It'll be fine. So it'll be fine. Send a patch, right? So we decided to use WebKit probably a little bit too early. Now, I'm not referring to WebKit as the pure upstream that runs in like Google Chrome or whatever. I'm talking about like the Python WebKit GTK bindings and all this other technical mumbo-jumbo. It doesn't even matter. Either way, we decided to use WebKit. The problem is that we never really paid attention to the nuances of what this decision cost us. So at the time, we in Ubuntu were ready to make a release, and we had a certain version of WebKit, and then somebody filed a bug, and it's like, you know, Wiver doesn't work. I got a big blue window. It's kind of crappy. I was like, I asked you that bug before. It's like, well, what are you using? I'm using Fedora. Oh, that's weird. What version of WebKit are you guys running? And it was like a micro release different, but it was different enough to break our stuff, right? And it was like, huh, okay, that's weird. Then Ken, like, IMG, he's like, hey, by the way, Wiver doesn't work at Foresight anymore. I'm like, oh, so what's going on here? So the way we were doing themes was really breaking. It was a strange thing where we ended up not really figuring out why it was broken. We had to rewrite it some other way. So it came to the point where it's like, well, we have certain users using stuff on older distributions, right? And we're gonna release a new distribution here, and we know we're broken on other distributions, but I don't know, maybe they'll do an update for us or we'll do something. Either way, distros are shipping different versions of WebKit, and there's nothing we can really do about it right now. So what do? We could sit here all night and try to like backport to all this other, you know, try to get it working, see if a distro will carry a patch just for now, and then we'll figure it out upstream later. Da 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 da. What do? We took the lazy way out. We're like, screw that. If you want to run Wiver, just upgrade your distro. Right? And this was really a mistake. It really sucked. I mean, we've gotten to the point where we had enough users where you're reaching like a mass, right? And then we sit here and then we talk about Linux for human beings and, you know, Linux is finally getting into the, you know, man, my grandma can almost use it and all that stuff. And she installs this software because she wants to like, post on Twitter because my grandma's on Twitter. It doesn't work because they're too lazy to do it. So in hindsight, what we should have done here is we probably should have kept running the Cairo backend for one more release. And then maybe at the time, after the churn in upstream Wiver, you know, WebKit was finished, then ship that stuff. But we didn't know that at the time, because we were kind of like shooting from the hip. So that's something to think about. When you're making those, remember I was talking about the platform, when you're making those decisions about the platform, consider how much churn is going on upstream, right? Next, please. Tool Wanker, I love this slide. So one of the things I love about when people start their own projects is the first 6 months of like discussion is like what tools are you gonna use, right? So you got the distributed version control geeks arguing about like Git, BZR, and HG, and there's always a dark guy, you ever notice that, right? Right, and then you got the other half arguing about whether you're gonna use Joomla or Drupal, right? And then, I don't know, someone's, oh, this is my favorite, when Chromium came out and they're like, all right, we're gonna use GTK, there was like a huge thread on why they weren't using Qt and blah, 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 blah. So, my advice to you is just pick something, doesn't matter, whatever you're comfortable with, and just do it, because the rest is just noise, right? Unfortunately, see, they put this in the code of conduct and it upsets me. I'm a big proponent of just killing people, but they don't let me do that. No, but people will sit there and argue, and you'll see this especially in that poisonous person talk. You always have that person that's all, it's strange how many people will argue about what mailing list software you're using. You know, it's like, dude, you know we're making a totally separate piece of software. So people will get wrapped up in this. It's just a waste of time. Just get your work done. Forget that stuff. Next slide. However, I'm gonna go ahead and break that rule and then recommend tools to you. One thing I can agree with, and using the distributed version control, that's what DVCS means. So you're seeing this in a lot of projects. Distros are doing it, upstreams are doing it. I'm not saying Subversion is going away. We would be so lucky, but in some ways it really kind of like raises the contributing barrier, right? Because everyone's like, well, you know, in the past, all I really had to know was CVS. Everyone hated it, but at least everyone knows how it works, right? Now it's like, well, I'm gonna check out this project, right? And then it's like, oh, they're using BZR, but I'm a Git guy. This one uses HG, and my program wants to use both, right? And then you're like, oh man, I have to learn three. Oh God, this sucks, right? But once you wrap your head around a DVC, I'm not gonna go down that rabbit hole, but once you get your head wrapped around distributed version control, we found that that in things like River, it really enables people to work on their own stuff, and being able to branch and work on something is really useful, especially doing merges. I'll get to that in a little bit. Excuse me, I'm burpy. You also want to invest time in learning the tools. I'm not saying you should go like sign up for 65 hours of Git. Right? But you should at least learn how the tools work, right? So Gwibber uses Launchpad. We have a feature that lets you do like web reviews where you see the guys checked in code and you can like inspect it and make comments and then you can say, nice try, Greg, please fix this. And there's this like all really nice web workflow there, and it's really useful and that kind of stuff. And we weren't using it for a while because A, we didn't know it existed. B, we didn't invest in ourselves, right? If you're gonna go through the pain of making your own software and doing all this stuff, spending that little bit of time to learn how the tool works can really go a long ways, especially when working with other people. However, tools won't save you from being dumb. A lot of people think this. They're like, I would tell Ryan this all the time. I was like, how in the world can, in a world where we have things that can be rolled back, how can this possibly happen? It's like, well, really, sometimes we think the tools are crutches, right? So it's like, why aren't we releasing tarballs? Well, because we didn't recognize that was an important thing to do. So we kind of like blame the tools. We're like, well, you know, doesn't everyone just pull from like version control? Dude, you're so Unix, get over it, right? So you use them to complement whatever your workflow is. If you don't know what your workflow is, that's what you're figuring out. Next slide, please. So you need to spot fail from afar. So do you update this regularly? Spot, I don't know, but yeah. So Spot did this great blog post where he basically, he's reviewing stuff that gets included into Fedora or whatever, and he was like, you know what, I'm starting to see a pattern here. So he came up with a set of rules of things that suck that your project might do. So I highly recommend this. So being an old sysadmin in the Unix world, right, it's like, this is my favorite, you get like a vendor tool that's supported under Linux, right? And they give you an RPM, and then you like expand it, right? But it's really like a tarball in there, they don't really like install anything, right? And then you do that, and then you find like 65 copies of Java in like the source tree, you know, and you're like, wait, that's not right. I need to make this, but they made their own make tool, right? So all these annoying little things. So he started to write these down. And I decided to go through and see all the things that Gwibber does and add up a score here. So, does not announce releases on the mailing list. First of all, we have a mailing list, but we don't use it because it's just me and Ryan talking, right? Usually our mailing list is like a person every few weeks asking, you know, why the app doesn't work and stuff. Because why? Because we're not engaging with our communities. It sucks, right? Does not do version releases. Yeah, we don't do that. Does not do releases. This is my favorite. How can you possibly have a software project and not do releases, right? So what we do is we tag inside BTR, it says 1.0, but we don't really tell anybody, right? So it like, because we messed up the packaging, so we need a number larger than what we had before, right? To make it work. Yeah, whatever. So, and website doesn't have any documentation because we didn't have a website. We had some documentation on the Ubuntu Wiki, and then we're like, well, this should really live on live.gnome.org. Then we moved it there, but we like never updated the links to anywhere, and then we kept around the old documentation on the Ubuntu Wiki and only updated the stuff on the GNOME Wiki. So when you would search for stuff, it'd be totally wrong. So we finally have a website. Yeah, and everyone's like nodding because this happens to you all the time, right? You're searching for stuff and there's always like the complete guide to, you know, fixing your, oh my favorite, the complete guide to fixing your networking in GNOME and Ubuntu, right? And you start reading it and then you're like, wait a minute, I know that's not right. And whatever, and it ends up it's like from three versions ago or something. So we totally did that and we totally screwed everybody. So when you add all those up, next slide. So he has a good gradient based on when you add all those up. And Gwibber scored 103, which is on the Hong Kong the failed what has arrived level of crap. Okay? I wanted to have some other projects by comparison, but I was definitely afraid that they would score a lot more, right? Yeah, that's probably worse than killing kids. Oh, according to the scale. So someone actually has a scale. Oh boy. Next slide. So I was like, so as you're sitting there going through this list, you're like, man, dude, making software is hard. No, it's not. Making software is easy. Making good software is hard. Right? And we all know about this because we all use Linux, right? So I want to talk about paper cuts for a bit. Next slide. So this is what Gwibber used to look like. Simple things like polish. So for some reason, I'm going to blame Ryan on this. We thought that like a blue background with a diagonal dark blue background would look good. And then your default things would be blue, but if you picked a different service, it would be a different color. But we never like associated the color with the service. So us, you know, hey, we are running a Linux app. It's the user's choice, right? So we never set like good default colors. We like made the users get that wheel, and you had to pick it and never pick right. And then you pick it, and then the you can't read the text. It's a disaster, right? So this is something I'm really proud of here because I think finally, as a whole, we're really starting to see an effort by free software people to care about design. Why? Because we're sick of crap. I don't know how many of you guys are really like sick of ugly looking apps, right? Right. We're finally learning how to design software. So at Canonical, we have a design team, right? There's a whole bunch of GNOMer people that are doing design. Red Hat has Maren Duffy and I don't know how many other people, but everyone's starting to do this work in design, and we're finally starting to realize, you know, if you design something, then you grab that, and you walk out into the street or grab random people, have them test it, and you write all that crap down, and then you start to collect these, and then you say, 9 times out of 10, when a user goes and does this, it fails. Maybe we should fix that first, right? And then as you iterate, your software starts to get better. So we're, Ivanka Magic, she leads up the design team at Canonical. We did user testing on Gwibber, and we sent those results to Ryan, and they were a fail. Because it's really awesome, because by default, when you launch, it would just show the blank blue thing. So it would say, oh, the Gwibber, also a horrible name, the Gwibber instant microblogging application, right? And you launch it, and you just get a blank screen because you haven't configured your your Twitter and your identity and stuff. So now we're starting to fix that in 2.0. It still has a ways to go, but it's better showing a blank blue screen, by default. So one of the great things I noticed too is Jacob Steiner, who works at Novell, he's like a Tango guy, and he did a Gwibber theme, and he just made these nice little polish things that really, one day when I saw it, I was like, man, we're actually starting to look like somebody loved to design this. So he would do things like when it's loading, it would show like a little loader instead of just like randomly failing in the background without telling you. These kind of like little things that we never really cared about, right? But when you add them all up, they're really important. Because the last thing you want to do is stab users in the face, right? So finally, I think overall, everybody's doing this, you know? I'm talking a lot about the canonical designs, but everyone's doing this. We're finally starting to realize that if we make really awesome stuff, people will use it. Next slide. So user support, one thing I highly recommend. Here's another one. If you have a project and it's going to be have a publicly accessible bug tracker that people file bugs, you're going to want to have a person that goes read and reads them. Because it was one of those things that's like, well, we have Launchpad bugs and that kind of stuff. And then one day I went in, I was like, man, there's like 300 open bugs. Who's looking at these, Ryan? I thought you were. Oh, that's funny. I thought you were. Man. So, but you can mitigate this. So you can have regular bug days that are popular with projects. You can have personal rotating through the bug wrangler role or whatever. But you can figure that out. The tools are out there. You need like a release manager, because if we had someone that actually knew how to release software, maybe we could have made a release sometime ever. So usually that person actually ends up being the I have a big stick person. It's like, dude, and I don't know how many times you've done this to Greg, but sometimes I'll be like, Ryan, there are three things in the merge queue that need to be looked at. This guy sent a patch like 3 weeks ago. If you don't get this in, he's gonna never send you a patch again. So there needs to be somebody there to like track down developers, right? And you don't even have to be a developer. You just need the capability to read, basically saying, hey, I don't know if this patch is good or not, but this guy submitted it like 3 weeks ago and no one has left a response. At least have the common courtesy to tell them to go get that or something. I don't know, you could call that like user relations, community development, I don't know, it all kind of falls into the same thing. As it turns out, the more you take care of these bugs, the more people are apt to help you, right? So if you report a bug, and for example, with that bug that we can never figure out, you know, you have to be yourself, right? I mean, don't lie to the user. I was like, look, dude, I want to help you, but I don't know. Let's keep this open. Maybe we'll lucky someone from the internet will stop by and hook us up. Next slide. So if you're so smart, how come Quiver 2.0 sucks? Who's running Quiver? Actually, that's a good question. Who's running Quiver, has heard of Quiver, or has a Twitter client? Who's on Twitter in Identica? Okay, all right, that's all right. So you're like, man, he's talking about software I've never heard of. So we're currently having some challenges here, and like I said, a lot of this is communication, so I'm gonna just go ahead and take the blame for everything. So one of the things we did is we failed at explaining what exactly a 2.0 roadmap was to users and other contributors. So in Ubuntu, we had a spec at this last development summit called Social by Default, right? So more and more and more, you're having people, like, their lives are based around social networks. Like, you know, I love, like, Last.fm, and I use Facebook, but I don't want to, but I'm kind of, like, addicted to it. And so more and more people are, like, using these social networks and stuff. Wouldn't it be great if the operating system just did that by default? So we had this spec, and we had Ryan call in. And so we decided, hey, you know, it'd be really great. We'll split Quiver into like a daemon, and then we'll have it running in the background, because that's exactly what the Linux desktop needs, right? More services running in the background. And the UI will be separate, but we don't really have to like use it. We'll like design a panel applet so people can change their status like they do there, and then we'll tie it into this, and there'll be email signals here. It'd be totally awesome. And then we did this, we took notes, and then we put it on the, you know, the Ubuntu wiki as, you know, as a spec, and then we have all this process stuff that we have to do. But we didn't really tell anybody. One day, while we were working towards this goal, the tag 2.0 went into the version. So everyone thought Quiver 2.0 was out. What really it was is we were getting this into the archive early so we can get it tested, get it out there, get it broken so we can get it fixed. So one day, you know, I'm waking up, I'm like, man, everyone's like, hey, oh, 10 minutes. Everyone's hating on Quiver, you know? What's going on? Oh my God, these people think Quiver 2.0 is out. Why is that? Because since we had failed to really get into distros because, you know, that WebKit problem and all this kind of stuff, we were telling people to use a PPA, which is like a separate archive. So it turns out all our users were running this like nightly snapshot PPA, so that when Ryan would make a change, and sometimes trunk breaks, right? Because what's unit testing? Never heard of it. So, you know, stuff would break. And the people would be like, man, why are so many people running the nightlies? Well, because we were making releases, they had no choice but to run the nightlies, right? So next thing you know, every little change that we made in a development branch, you know, was breaking people's stuff. And then that kind of like ruins the purpose of having a development branch, because developers need the room to like break stuff and experiment and do all that kind of stuff. And also, it's not done, so give me a break. That was like a funny joke there. Next slide. So negativity sucks. I don't want to go into here and talk about how everything has failed, blah, 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 blah. Because if you're keeping people involved, if you're doing the things like mentoring people and doing all sorts of things, you'll be amazed at how your friends can really get you out of the scratch. So we have 30 solid contributors who have contributed something like significant. Over 60 branches on Launchpad. We have like merges and all that good stuff that you hear going on. Some are even in this room. So learn from us and from other projects. You'd be surprised at how embarrassed I was to post stuff. Because I do community stuff as like part of my job. And I was like, man, if I go on a mailing list and I ask like, hey, does anybody know how to like actually release software? Then you have to wait, man. That's the last thing I want. So you need to check your ego at the door and just be able to say, dude, you know, I suck. Can somebody help me? Right. And never ever give up. You know, ignore the stop energy. During this time when the Gwibber 2.0 flamage was going on, I was like, man, I'm doing this on my spirit. I'm not paid to do this. And like, this guy's telling me I suck. Why don't I just like stop working on it? Then I'll be right, he'll be wrong, right? So, next slide. We all have bad ideas. Man, I don't know. So we get all these feature requests that Gwibber should like do IMAP polling so you can check your email, like you do your Twitter and stuff. And I don't know, I wrote this and I'm really embarrassed about it because when you start your own project, the ability to, you approach being able to read and write email. It's like some kind of JWZ law or something like that. So, but if you surround yourself with good friends, if you respect each other and everyone has a common goal and you're doing all these things, you can afford to have an idiot like me working on your project. And that's okay. Next slide. Any questions? How much time I got left?
It's 4:47.
When am I supposed to end? I have 8 minutes. Oh, yeah, that's a great idea. So ironically here, so I work on Ubuntu, so I'm supposed to know all this stuff, right? But it's not until you actually, when me and Ryan were doing it, it felt like my own little thing, right? Someone had already started Ubuntu, and I was there from the beginning, but you know, I didn't like help shape it. I just kind of joined in, right? So it already had like a culture and all this kind of stuff. But like I was saying, it's not until like 3 a.m. when you're sitting there and you're like, man, what have I got myself into? I'm pulling WebKit from source when I know damn well I don't even know how to build this, but I want to help this guy and do all this kind of stuff. And you think that you would know it. So don't assume that you can pull it off even though you know that. I know this community stuff and like working and talking to upstreams and stuff. I do that every day for my job. Ironically, Ryan spends his life reporting about open source projects for the past 3 years. So you figure us two, we should know what we're doing, but we don't. We didn't, you just have to figure it out yourself. Any other questions, complaints?
Why did you